Welcome to AI Arthritis Voices 360, the podcast solving today's most pressing issues in the AI arthritis community. We invite you all to the table, where together we face the daily challenges of autoimmune and autoinflammatory arthritis. Join our fellow patient co-hosts as they lead discussions in the patient community, as well as consult with stakeholders worldwide to solve the problems that matter most. Whether you are a loved one, a professional working in the field, or a person diagnosed with an AI arthritis disease, this podcast is for you. So pull up a chair and take a seat at the table.
Everybody, and welcome to AI Arthritis Voices 360. This is the official talk show for the International Foundation for Autoimmune and Autoinflammatory Arthritis, or AI Arthritis for short. My name is Layla P.L. Valette, and I am the Health Education Manager here at the organization and person living with lupus, lupus nephritis, and Sjogren's disease. I'm joined here today by two amazing advocates, Estella and Carrie. They've both been co-hosts for the past few years and have a lot of amazing things that they also do on their own. So we are so grateful to have them here with us today. Estella, did you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yes. Hello, everyone. I'm Estella Mata from Looms for Lupus. I'm one of the co-founders and also support group facilitators and president of Looms for Lupus. I'm excited to be here with my AI arthritis family to talk about things that impact us. You know, I was just recently diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, and I have family members with autoimmune and arthritis conditions. So I'm excited again to be here. Thank you for inviting me and including me in this amazing recording today.
Awesome. And Carrie?
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm sorry that I can't be on camera right now, but apparently technology thinks that I have a face for radio. But I am Carrie Wong, also known as the butterfly of Float Like a Butterfly. I have what my rheumatologist calls autoimmune soup, which is a combination of some sarcoidosis, which is a rare inflammatory disease that affects my joints as well as a whole lot of other systems. And I also have rheumatoid arthritis and Sjogren's, and like most of us, a laundry list of other things to go along with. I am a writer and a patient advocate. I currently have a regular column on a site called Sarcoidosis News. It's also called Float Like a Butterfly. And what I am most excited about is that I just released my first book. It is called Kaleidoscope Rare Disease Stories. It's a collection of 60 stories from close to 50 different people living with rare diseases. So I am always excited to help lift other voices, raise other voices, and share each other's stories. And so I'm looking forward to today for a chance to, you know, hear from some of the other stories and see how we can kind of jump back in to give you some suggestions and tips and tricks to make things a little easier.
Thank you so much. Yeah, exactly. That is what we are here to do today. So today's topic is social wellness with an AI arthritis disease. This topic came about in the past few months when we had a social media post that got a lot of response to it. If you all keep up with our social media, you might see that every week we post a community question to gauge the community's input on different aspects of life having to do with AI arthritis diseases. And so this post in particular asked about social life and AI arthritis disease. And there was an overwhelming response that social life is deeply impacted by our diseases, and it is affected in many people's lives that do have our diseases. So we wanted to talk today about the importance of social wellness, what that means, and how we can have some tips, tricks, modifications in order to make sure that we are still socially fulfilled, even though there may be some barriers to that. So we are going to go into that. We can start by just first telling you all what social wellness is. And so according to Northwestern University, social wellness is defined as developing a sense of connection, belonging, and a well-developed support system. And so, you know, you can only imagine that for the average everyday today person, it is important to have social wellness, but even more so for those that may have our diseases. And so why is social wellness important? According to the University of Omaha, maintaining an optimal level of social wellness allows you to build healthy relationships with others. Having a supportive social network allows you to develop assertive skills and become comfortable with who you are in social situations. Surrounding yourself with a positive social network increases your self-esteem, and social wellness enables you to create boundaries that encourage communication, trust, and conflict management. Having a good social wellness is critical in building emotional resilience. And so, as you can see, all of those things that are important for those just in general with social wellness are even more so important for those with our diseases, because we do need support. No matter if it's physical support, emotional support, financial support, we do need support from our support system every once in a while or every day, depending on how much you might need. But being able to communicate that and feeling comfortable, like it says, to be assertive and letting people know what you need is important. So practicing that on an everyday basis is important to when you do need that in a more serious situation. So I think that was a really good explanation and definition of social wellness. Do either of you have any more input on that?
Yeah, I think what I think is really important, I want to touch on something that was included in that University of Omaha explanation, is surrounding yourself with a positive social network increases your self-esteem. And I think that idea, that social network, is what is so important for us, and quite literally the social network. If you remember the old film, that was what Facebook was originally referred to as. And it's all social media, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or whatever other, you know, TikTok or whatever it is that you're using. We often hear, you know, about the dark side of the internet or the dark side of, you know, social media. There's so many problems here and there. But what is really, really so important is that, especially for those of us with AI arthritis diseases, that social media, that presence there, that community that we can find there is something that can really help us keep going when we are not able to go out and, you know, especially if we're not able to work because of our conditions, we're stuck at home, especially if our symptoms keep us down a lot. We're stuck at home, and it's really, really easy to just become isolated and depressed. And so what is the greatest gift to all of us is the ability to find each other through the internet, to find other people living with the same kind of diseases, other people dealing with the same kind of problems, because we can build such strong relationships there that they really can be life-saving, life-altering, comforting, and can just do so much for us in so many different ways. And I think that we really need to give things like social media the credit for the great things that they do, even though we often hear about the problems that we have from them.
And for me, I like that, Carrie. I like that you're talking about, like, one of the aspects of, like, social wellness, right, is that connection that people find in social networks, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter or X now. But really, when you're looking at, to me, when I think of social wellness, it's really, you know, something that is vital for all of us, right? It's the ability to be able to connect with everyone and or with others and form those relationships that you need. Now, some people may think that this social wellness can come from, or this social connection or these relationships can come from family members. That's not always the case. Not everyone has family members, and others that may have family members, they're not as supportive and they're not connected and they don't have that. So I think it's looking at just basically the connection that you have with others and that relationship that you form, and not only fostering that meaningful connection, but also having it impact our, you know, our relationships or our lives, both mentally, spiritually, and physically. And what do I mean by that? I mean, connecting with someone that provides us that support, right? So for me, I'm also, besides being a patient advocate and also living with a condition, I'm the number one supporter for my sisters, for my mom. And, you know, our relationship is amazing because I'm able to understand them. I'm able to learn from them and I'm able to support them. So whether that's with a simple hug, and that's the physical touch that I'm talking about, the emotional support is anytime that they need me, they can just call me and I will pick up. Or that spiritual, where I will go to church with my sister. So I feel like, you know, these connections, again, are vital. So whether I connect with someone on social media and I'm able to relate to them, or they're able to relate to me and provide that support, I think overall, social wellness is that connection, whether you're family or friends or just simply someone living with similar chronic and or autoimmune or arthritis or arthritic conditions.
Absolutely. I think that you both made amazing points. I think obviously after the pandemic, we've learned that technology is our biggest tool, especially with patients with arthritis diseases. I think that us having to lock down really made sure that we knew that connection can be formed in other ways. So I am very glad that that has become more of the normal for the whole world and not just AI arthritis patients, so that it can be accommodating for us to be able to make connections that way if that's how we prefer. Of course, in-person connections do sometimes hit a little different than, you know, seeing someone on a screen, but that doesn't mean that those relationships aren't just as meaningful as the ones that you also have in person. So I think that's also is something that I've noticed, that even if you are mostly just talking to someone through the screen, that doesn't really mean much as long as you both are genuine in your connection and making the effort to have that relationship. I think that you can definitely get support through technology and social media and things like that as well. So I wanted to maybe talk a little bit about our own social lives and how we deal with being able to make sure that we have that social wellness. I know that for a lot of us, we may tend to, you know, go and actually physically hang out with people. It might be far and few between, or it might be something that you don't even think about, that you're like, oh, this is a part of my social life and my social wellness. So I would love to open up the conversation to either of you to start talking about how you approach your own social life.
Okay. So it's funny, when I first saw that we were going to do a show about this topic, what immediately popped in my head, and I just had to laugh, is that, gosh, it's got to be maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I saw a post on Facebook. Somebody had posted something. It said, "You are the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with." And as soon as I saw that, I just automatically responded, okay, well, that's probably my husband, my mom, and I guess 3 doctors. And it was kind of the automatic, maybe a little bit snarky, but then it just got me thinking how real that really was. And I ended up, you know, I had to kind of explore it further and write about it more. And what I ended up doing was I sort of took a look at the past month, and I made a list of every time I saw someone, had some sort of in-person social interaction with somebody throughout the month. And it happened to be April, which is Sarcoidosis Awareness Month. And so that's the time that I am probably busier than any other month throughout the year. And I think I had maybe 10 incidences throughout the month where I actually saw somebody outside of my medical providers. But then I looked at my color-coded calendar. And so all of the red on there, which is what I use for medical appointments, and I had something like 13 or 14 of those within that month. You know, so it just, and that was actually a light month when I didn't have a whole lot going on significantly that, you know, I didn't have a new outstanding urgent problem to deal with. It was just, this was my regular thing. And I had like 13 or 14 medical appointments in a given month. And it just made me think about how important it is to have that social interaction, to have that social life. You know, I was able to see throughout those, you know, those 10 activities included seeing my mom for Mother's Day and my mother-in-law for her birthday. And, you know, so there were a couple of holiday occasions where I actually got to see family, and a couple of times where I maybe had dinner with a friend of my husband's, because most of my friends in person have kind of faded away, or they're just too far away to really get together. So I just kind of really was thinking about how, you know, in addition to just the fact that I had so many more medical appointments than fun things, social things, what I also looked at was the number of things that I had to cancel. And there were probably more things that I had to cancel or say no to than there were things that I was able to actually do. And so I think that's when, you know, yes, it's great to go and have dinner with a friend, but it could take a week of recovery after going out to dinner with a friend. So that's when I think it is so much more critical to make the most of what you do have. And for me in person, that's my husband and my mom. And I know that I am very lucky to have them. Beyond that, for the most part, it's my sarcoidosis family who I see mostly online. It's my arthritis family who I see mostly online. It's my rare disease family who I see mostly online. And that, you know, like you said, Layla, it's something that, you know, people who don't have it might not understand, but just because it's through a screen doesn't mean that we, you know, we can still have and create some of the deepest, most genuine, closest relationships with people because of the bond that we form from these other things. And that really can't be discounted. You know, it's sad that there are a lot of people who I thought were friends who have kind of faded and drifted out of my life. But what I need to do and think about and kind of reframe it is that I have the people who really matter, the people who really care. They are the people who are in my life, who will stay in my life, and they are the ones that matter, and they are the ones that make me feel better when I need it. So that is really kind of where the shift comes, I think, for me.
And for me, I think, you know, it's talking about what are the components or what makes up this social wellness, right? For me, you know, you're talking about emotional support, you know, which is really, again, the ability to connect with others, right? And then you have these social connections, right? Which these social connections, just like you were saying, Carrie, they're the people that you know, you connect with on social media, whether or your family members, right? These people connect with us at a different level because not only are we connecting, but we feel trust. We feel like heard. We feel included. We are able to express ourselves. We're able to feel acknowledged. And I think that is really what helps us, right? This social connection that we have is what is going to relieve our stress, which hopefully prevent our flares. And again, promoting both physical and mental wellness. Now, when you're talking about this social wellness that comes about from these connections with these other people, whether, again, family or friends or just, you know, someone that you meet online, we feel so lonely. We feel alone when we are first diagnosed, you know, whether you're just diagnosed now or whether you've been diagnosed for a long time living with your condition, you're still going to feel lonely at times. You're still going to feel stressed. You're still going to need someone, right? We're just creatures of habit. We want to connect. We want to feel loved. We want to be heard. And so what we need to do is try to connect with others, whether if you're homebound, you know, you do it on social networks or support groups, right? You form these amazing relationships. For me, I get my social wellness from my family, from my friends, from the support groups. So I actually facilitate support groups with my sister. And every relationship is so unique, right? And they both, it's nurturing, not just for me, but I think also for them. You know, you build this connection that you wouldn't have otherwise. You know, you're vulnerable. You get to express yourselves. You get to feel heard and understood. And most importantly, I think you feel seen. I mean, I can't even describe that feeling, you know, of hope that you get from others when they're learning from each other, when you hear about what can help you or what's helping them. I think just overall, just again, you know, those connections that we build, no matter with whom or with or in what form or location, I think those are very, very vital.
Definitely. I think it's very interesting talking about this topic for me because I grew up having lupus. I was 12 years old when I was diagnosed with lupus. So it's always been a part of me prefacing, like with people who are my friends, like they do know and they've known for a very long time that I do have a condition where I will need to cancel sometimes. I will need to take some time for myself every once in a while. I think there's a weird juxtaposition because when I was younger, I did not really care about my health as much. And so I would prioritize socializing. And so I graduated college in 2019, right before the pandemic happened. So I went from having a very robust social life to having just the people that were around me. And luckily, I did live with three of my best friends, including my now husband, and two of my best friends that were a part of my wedding that I just had a few months ago. And so we were able to stay home and make a really great time during COVID. And I'm so thankful for that. But the transition after that was very hard for me because I had gone from always being a part of a community, whether it be dance or volleyball or the Filipino club that I was a part of when I was in college. I had always been surrounded by so much socialization. So moving then, you know, in 2020 on to now in 2024, I've struggled actually to find a community that I wanted to be a part of and felt like I was a part of. And I have been striving for that for for maybe about a year and a half and kind of picking my brain to see what else I can be a part of. And I've been a part of AI Arthritis for about a year and a half, and that has really brought me a lot more socialization, a lot more understanding, or feeling like people understand me and my condition, and also being able to, you know, be a voice of being able to help others that have our diseases too. I feel very grateful every day that I do have, you know, a milder form of lupus where I'm not debilitated. I don't feel like it affects my everyday life, but I know that it's taken a lot of work and a lot of help to get to that point. So I still make sure that I keep the time for myself. I probably only go out and go hang out with people once or twice a month. We really, you know, stay in the house a lot, but I'm also lucky that my best friend is my husband. So we socialize with each other all day, every day, and have so many things to talk about. Also during my wedding, I was able to revive my friend group of our middle school friends. So I have a little group chat that's been going on ever since January. We check in with each other every day and keep each other accountable for the different goals that we have right now. So I feel like that's been very helpful for me. And just in the past 2 months, I've been very active on TikTok. Some of you who may have seen previous episodes, but I recently got vertical sleeve gastrectomy surgery in June of last year. And I did not know until recently that the weight loss surgery community on TikTok is huge. So I have been jumping into TikTok lives with a lot of different people who have gone through this surgery and talking about all the different lifestyle changes that we've had to make. But I've additionally, you know, on TikTok, you can have a little screen name that kind of explains what your page is about. So mine says Lay, VSG, and Lupus. And so whenever I go live on TikTok, I've been able to find 3 other people that have also had the same surgery as me and have also had lupus. And so I've been able to find such a very niche category of people on that app, but it made me feel seen, and it even more so made them feel seen because I was the one going live, talking about my experience, answering questions and things like that. So that has also really made a big deal in my social life so far. So I've been striving to find a community, and I feel like I'm kind of getting there. I eventually do want to get back into dance and things like that, but for now, in the interim, I feel like this has been a really good option for me to get the socialization and meet new people. And I think one thing that we should also hit on is how hard it is to put yourself out there in order to find these relationships sometimes. Like, you know, I post on social media, Carrie posts on social media, and so does Estella. But even just to find the right audience and get the right people to see your posts sometimes can be hard. So how have you all, like, put yourself out there to make those connections online and kind of further that relationship. Because I think that, that might be something that our community would really like to know. I mean, I'm a naturally extroverted person where I do like to put myself out there, but there may be people out there that aren't necessarily like that. So what kind of advice can we give to those people who are looking for social connection but don't really know where to start?
I mean, I can start. One of the things, and kudos to you, Layla, because I have been following you on TikTok, and I think it's amazing that you're putting yourself out there and sharing your experience, because the one thing that we're talking about here, right, is about connection, connecting with others that may feel alone, or even for yourself if you're feeling alone, right? We seek that connection. And I think, you know, putting yourself out there, you know, it's that vulnerability that we have, right? And I think that's what you could see that through you. So you're being vulnerable, but you're also being you're empowering yourself and you're empowering others to let them know that it's okay to not be okay and to be vulnerable and to talk about these things that not everyone talks about, right? Not everyone talks about their chronic conditions. Not everyone talks about personal life experiences with like surgeries or procedures, because, you know, it could be taken a whole different level. At a whole different level, it could be a positive thing, and it could also turn into a very negative thing very quick, right? And you have all these judgments. So for me, I think the one thing that I would recommend for everyone is to have that balance, right? To be able to feel, you know, seen and heard, and to be able to share and connect with others, but also prepare yourself when you're exposing a lot of things that you may not want to get any negative criticism or feedback from, and limit yourself in what the responses that you give back to those negative comments, right? Because that could be also hurtful. So you don't want to overwhelm yourself. So I think balance is a good thing. And then also learning about, you know, recharging and taking time off of these social networks or just social connections. Layla, you mentioned like you have taken time off, like sometimes you're very active and then you take a month off, or you know, we have to look at those things, you know, what is best for you, right? I'm very extrovert too. I could talk to everyone and anyone, but I don't share everything on social media. I don't. There are things that I do keep private, but anything that has to do with me helping others or sharing an experience about something that I know can help someone else, I put myself out there. But when it's something super personal, I don't. So having that balance is critical.
I definitely agree that balance is very, very important. And there were actually a couple of things, Layla, that you mentioned that I think also are worth noting. One is that you said you had lupus since you were a child. And so you grew up with this chronic illness, and how much you told people or didn't tell you prioritized your social life when, you know, not thinking as much about health. But you've grown up with this. So I think in some ways you've kind of had a chance to sort of learn the ropes or adjust and adapt to what makes you comfortable, perhaps for a longer period of time. Whereas Estella, I'm not sure if you were diagnosed when you were younger or not until later. But like for me, everything started when I was in my early 30s. So the whole idea of, you know, what was a social life, what was my social life, and how I interacted with people was just an entire world of difference. And I was a very social, overactive, I worked a million hours a week and volunteered a million hours on top of that. And, you know, somewhere in between found time to, you know, go out, you know, for happy hour after work and all those other things. And then when I was still working, but I was getting sicker, and especially during the years when I didn't really know what was wrong with me, I knew it was something, but I couldn't get my doctors to figure it out. It was a lot harder for me because I didn't even have the answer to say, oh, well, I can't do that, or I'm really tired, I have this condition and that's what is affecting me, and so I hope you'll understand, or, you know, some other version of that idea of a statement, I didn't have that. And so people just saw me go from someone who used to do everything and go everywhere to someone who did less and canceled more. And I was just not as much fun anymore. And I think that's a part of where I lost some people, you know, and then from being active at work and working in a very community-driven environment, and then suddenly kind of losing all of that, that was all these different directions and avenues of people that I suddenly didn't have anymore. So that was really difficult for me, because it wasn't just a matter of growing up with something. And not to say that it's easy to grow up with it, because, you know, I know kids can be difficult. So I feel for you with that. But it is, you know, it's a different experience when it comes from having it all or feeling like you've got it all to losing it all. And so finding that balance, I think, like you were saying, Estella, it's a little bit harder to get people to understand what that balance is that you need when you don't have as clear of an answer, or when you have a condition that people haven't heard of before or just don't understand. It's hard for them to understand more of what we're really going through. And that's where I think, you know, sharing our stories is so important, not only for us, but, you know, Layla, like you said, you sharing your story helps other people feel seen. And, you know, that's what I think we as advocates really want to do as often as we can. But Estella, like you said, there does need to kind of be that boundary. We all need to be able to have a healthy boundary. So just as an example of that, you know, in wanting to share things with social media, for instance, I have, you know, my personal page, which is Carrie Wongs as a person. And that's, you know, my friends, people I've grown up with, people, you know, who have been a part of my life. And I actually, you know, know them and they know me. And then I have my public Float Like a Butterfly page. And that's where I will post all of the chronic illness related activity, the social media, the rare disease information, the advocacy activities, all of those things will go on my public page, because that can reach a wider audience. But if there's something that not everybody needs to know, then that can go on my personal page. And if it's really something not everybody needs to know, then of course that's not, you know, getting posted on social media anywhere. But I think, you know, having those kind of separations helps to, you know, kind of have boundaries of how much you're willing to allow in and how much you're willing to allow out of your inner circle. And that's something that, you know, we all kind of have to figure out individually based on what we're comfortable with. And I know there's just one other thing that I wanted to touch on. Layla, you also mentioned that it was, you know, a little difficult when, you know, or finding new groups when, after being shut down during the height of the COVID pandemic and then getting back out into the world again, you know, it's, you kind of have to like refigure where you belong. And I think in some cases that can be also an extra challenge for us, because with autoimmune conditions, autoinflammatory conditions, and compromised immune systems, whether because of our condition or because of the immunosuppressive medication that we take to treat these conditions, we may not be ready to go back out there when everybody else is ready to go back out there. And, you know, that's one thing that I struggled with to some extent, still do, but I've been getting better, I think, is, you know, when the world shut down, my husband was still working, but when he wasn't working, he was home with me. We were, you know, in it together. And then as time went on and vaccines started to come and treatments started to come and people saw the world as safer, you know, my husband and his friends wanted to still go out. I still couldn't. You know, we would see ads for vacations that we would have loved to have taken and we would have taken a few years ago, but I couldn't anymore. And so what was really difficult for me was trying to find the balance between keeping myself safe, but not holding someone else back, which I think is just a very, very fuzzy area. Like, there's absolutely no clear line. It's a challenge. And, you know, it's something that I think I still kind of work on. I've been getting better at going out, but still with limitations, with I have my own restrictions. And so what I've had to do is kind of, you know, we together have sort of had to talk a bunch of times and think about and work on figuring out what things I'm okay with him doing with his friends, even if I don't go, because I don't want him to miss out. And then what things he doesn't want to do without me anyway, because he wants to be with me. And I'm grateful for that. And so that's, I think, you know, it's a fuzzy line to try and figure, but it's one that really requires communication. And that's, you know, the biggest thing is finding that, really being honest with yourself and with the people in your life who you want to still have in your life. And I'm not saying being honest and telling every detail of everything, but figure out what you need and what you are comfortable with and go from there and communicate that the people who love you and care about you and deserve to be in your life will appreciate that and will respect that. And if they don't, it may sound cold, but you're better off without them. And there are millions of people who are here for you, who do see you, who do hear you, who do believe you, and who are with you.
I love that, Carrie, that, you know, sometimes we do have to be flexible. And I'll be honest, you know, with the pandemic, you know, one of the silver linings for us was to facilitate our support groups, both virtually through Zoom, via Zoom, throughout the whole pandemic. Right now, we are offering both the virtual support groups because we know some people are not ready to come in person. We also host in-person support groups. So for those people that, you know, even though they're autoimmune, they have their autoimmune conditions and they're immune compromised, some of them would rather be in person. So we do hybrid. So we do in person and we do virtual as well. And it works. It works for us. It works for a lot of people. And I think it's amazing because you're still being able to connect with both worlds, right? And, you know, that is one of the things that I love about, you know, a lot of this social connection is that we're able to do it through different avenues. You know, we host a lot of support groups live in Spanish, like just to talk about everything wellness, right? We want that social connection, but we also have those in-person support groups where we're able to connect with people and also the virtual one. So I think it's just amazing to be able to do that. You know, we hosted a conference and Layla was part of it in February. It was a community event. So we were able to both offer it virtually and offer it to those that were comfortable to come in person. So I think, you know, that was one of the silver linings with the pandemic is that we were able to figure out different ways to still connect. Because again, this social connection is so vital, I think, for all of us. And even though, you know, COVID's still around, it is not considered a pandemic. We as people that live with these immune compromised conditions still have to be careful. And it is good to communicate to others and have those boundaries and be respected. And I think that's why it's so important to have these connections with the people that you trust and people that you love, because those people that are your supporters will understand because they have your back, right?
Absolutely.
I just was going to say, as you said that, Estella, what just popped in my head, there's an old Dr. Seuss quote that I think, you know, I've used a million times, other people have used a million times, but it says, be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter and those who matter won't mind. And I think that just really is the key, you know, and I mean, obviously in this situation, but I think in any situation really is, you know, to be true to yourself and value your own sense of self-worth and comfort and who you are and what you need, that all matters.
I agree. I think that we've touched on a lot of important points having to do with basically, you know, modifying how social life looks for people who have AI arthritis diseases. And I think we can go into the segment of reading some comments from this social media post that inspired this topic, because it goes into a few more things that I wanted to say also. But yeah, we wanted to ask the social media how their social life is and what they do to kind of modify it. One of the great suggestions that we have here, I'm not going to read everybody's names because it was on Facebook. I kind of want to keep everybody anonymous if they choose to be. So I'm going to just read the comment itself. But someone said, "I've turned my house into a meeting place. I'm socially active because everybody comes over." And so I think that that's a really great modification if that's something that you like, being able to host people. It can still get a little crazy if we're still very cautious of, you know, what's coming into the house and if there's people who are sick and if we're worried about being immunocompromised. But if you do want to socialize, but you're more a little bit hesitant to go out because you're tired and because of other symptoms of being in pain and things like that, having people come over to your place can really be a good alternative for sure.
Another comment was, somebody said, "Been a couple of times I thought I felt too wiped, too much in pain to go to meetups. I forced myself to go and was glad of it. Had some pain and fatigue the next couple of days as I knew I would, but still worth it." And I think that is also something to keep in mind. There are times that it might be worth the consequence to do the thing that we really want to do. You know, just as an example of that, when I go on vacation, I will make sure that I make certain plans, and my plans include a lot of rest days, and that's rest days while I'm on the trip and then at least a week of not having to do anything once I come back, because I know that I'm going to be suffering, but it's going to be worth it. And so I think that's also something that we can all kind of keep in mind when something comes up, and we can think about, is there a way that we can make it manageable? Or think about how much we think we're really going to, you know, what we're really going to feel and how long that's going to last if we do this thing. And, you know, sometimes we will say, you know what, this is so worth it, I'm going to do it. And other times we'll say it won't. Just like that second piece of chocolate cake. You know, if we think about whether it's worth it or not, then that can make it a little bit easier, whichever decision we make.
Definitely. I think that's not something that someone, you know, who doesn't have our diseases thinks about, is that we not only have to plan for the actual time, but the consequences that are going to come from that. And nowadays, that's, you know, it's not just the fatigue and the pain, but also thinking about, yeah, if what's going to happen to my immune system and what kind of sickness can I possibly have from, you know, all of this going on. Like with my wedding in January, I was like, I know that I'm going to get sick afterwards. There's no way that I'm not going to hug 150 people and be so stressed out about the wedding that I'm not going to be sick afterwards. So I planned to know that I was going to be sick after the wedding and knew that it was going to take another week or two to recover after. But that's things that you have to account for when you're making these plans, whether it be going to Disneyland, going to a concert, whatever that may be. Those things are in your head, but that doesn't mean that you can't do it. You just have to be prepared for the consequences afterwards.
Yes, you know, and I think, you know, when I was reading the comments on that post, and, you know, you read so many people, like some of them were short, some of them were, you know, were like explained more, right? But the one thing that, a couple of things that I was reading through is like, what social life, you know, I don't have that, or I'm always canceling, and, you know, and all of that. And I think the one thing we have to just remember is, we get it. Like for me, when I was reading, I'm like, I get it. Because why? My sister has lived with autoimmune conditions. You know, she has RA, she has lupus, and so many others. And, you know, me just recently being diagnosed with RA, but also having to live with fibromyalgia and having to be flexible is one of the things that we have to be okay with, right? It's that flexibility and be okay and forgiving to yourself, right? So it's okay to cancel the plans that you already had. It's okay if you need to reschedule because you're not feeling well. It's okay to block time when you get back from vacation, or block time for rest time. It is okay to do the things that are best for us. We have to be our own advocate for ourselves, and we have to be okay with doing that. So if that means, like, for me, I mean, I'll be honest, like, to take care of myself, like, it takes a lot, right? Because I'm always trying to care for others. You know, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a sister, I'm a daughter. Like, I always try to put everyone first. But really what we have to remember is, one, you can't pour from an empty cup, right? So you have to be forgiving to yourself, and you have to be accepting of yourself and accept that there are times where you are not going to be the best supporter for someone else because you need to take care of yourself. And for me, that's one of the things that I've been learning, and it's been a struggle because I wasn't always that person that put themselves first. And you always have to remember that practicing self-care is not being selfish. It is just basically giving yourself some time. And again, it's okay, you know, and again, you know, you have to look at what's best for you. If instead of going out for coffee, it's a phone call. If instead of, you know, inviting others, like Layla was saying, like, to your house, because, you know, you have to clean before, you have to clean during, and then you have to clean after. It's like, let's do a Zoom. Let's connect. Because a lot of the times your friends just want to connect with you. You know, they don't want you to host them. They just want to talk to you. So virtual connections is something I recommend. Being flexible, being forgiving to yourself, and allowing yourself some time. So those three things to me, I think, are vital. And, you know, again, if you surround yourself with people that are supportive and that understand you, it is going to be a lot easier. And I think that's why it's so great to be connected to these communities, because this post allowed people to, you know, be heard, right? We're listening to them. We're reading their messages. And then also for me, on a personal note, it allowed me to say, gosh, like, I'm not the only one, right? I feel seen myself as well. And then one, you know, we're here supporting each other and supporting that community. So this all, you know, kind of just is a summary of what social wellness is all about. Us connecting through social networks, being here virtually, and being able to connect and understand each other.
Yeah, I think that one of the things, like you said, like, there's a lot of people that overwhelmingly had the negative comments on the social media posts. And I wanted to address that because a lot of people said, what social life? You know, my social life is affected all the time. And I think changing also the mind frame of what a social life can be. I think that we've done that in this episode, is, you know, explaining the other options that we have for social life, and not just meeting in person, going mini golfing, or going to do whatever other social activity you might want to do. But really changing that mind frame of a social life is just connecting with someone on a deeper level, whatever that may mean to you, a text message, a phone call, a Zoom call, or anything like that, or an Instagram live, whatever it might be. And having a mindset of gratitude, of being thankful that you do have this technology to be able to connect with people, or being able to see that as your social life instead of just thinking that it is going out and going to the movies with your friends and dinner parties and things like that. I think that trying to invest the time into social media or an online connection can be very, very powerful for people if that's something that you'd like to try. I personally do prefer TikTok because I feel like TikTok is a little bit more unfiltered, and that there's a lot of people that are able to, you know, really express their true selves on there. Sometimes, you know, for the younger generation, for millennials and Gen Z, it can be Instagram is an ideal life and everybody is perfect and beautiful and all of that on Instagram. And that's what I kind of see from social media, and that TikTok is a little bit more raw and unfiltered in real life. So there, and it's not just the younger generation that's on TikTok too. I think a lot of people have that misconception of TikTok, but I interact with loads of people that are older than me, that are in their 40s, even in their 50s, looking for social connection online on TikTok. So if that's an avenue that you in particular might not have explored yet,
if you just go on there and look for the community that you're looking for, search any keywords, you might be able to find people that are, you know, looking for connection as well. So that's kind of one of my suggestions is maybe trying a new social media platform that no one knows who you are. And if you're genuinely, you know, kind of afraid to put yourself out there in the space that, you know, people may already know you, then TikTok might be a good place for that. Any other final words or suggestions that we might have on social wellness and how to improve your social life?
Well, you know, to me, I think you just gave a couple of great examples of why you're turning into TikTok versus any other, you know, platform. You know, you always hear Facebook is for the older generation. You hear, you know, Twitter X is more for like, okay, you know, it's a different audience, right? You have a lot of like the politicians and a lot of the stuff and on in Twitter or X. And then TikTok is more for like everyone. It's more inclusive, I feel. And you get to interact with different age groups. So for me, I mean, I'll be honest, I think just there is no one specific way to interact or to connect with, you know, with others, whether it's on social media or whether it's a support group or whether it's the community, whatever it is that makes you feel connected, that makes you feel seen, that makes you feel heard is really what's going to be the best thing for you. So there's not one single thing that I would suggest or recommend. So again, you know, what is the social wellness that we're talking about? We're really talking about fostering those meaningful connections, whether it's in person or virtual, right? And it is utilizing these connections to impact both our mental, our emotional, and our physical health. So look, whatever makes you feel good, whatever makes you feel connected, seen, and heard is really what I recommend for everyone.
Yeah, I definitely 100% second, third what you both have said. Having the options and knowing that there is always another option, what we are able to connect with and who we are able to connect with and why we are able to connect, it supersedes any of that superficial stuff. You know, it supersedes age or location or gender or race or, I mean, yes, absolutely, those things come into play in a lot of reasons, in a lot of different situations and all of that, and they do matter. But chronic illness and AI arthritis conditions and rare diseases and disability, those things happen to everyone. That's something that we can all share because nobody has to be in it alone. And that's really the single most important thing.
Absolutely. I think that was a really great stamp on the end of the conversation. Yeah, it affects everybody. I'm sure that there's people without AI arthritis diseases that are still struggling with figuring out where they find their place and how to be social and where to find their community. And so that's not something that we have to, you know, think that it is, you know, there's some extra barriers for us, but, you know, we're all still, you know, lifelong learners of trying to figure out what's best for us and trying out new things and, you know, finding that peace, whatever may bring us peace. So thank you both again for being here and having this conversation with me today. I feel like it was a great conversation. And there's some really good things that people can relate to that we talked about. So I thank you again both for being here today and being involved in the conversation. I'd love to give you both again the chance to shout out anything that you're working on. Let us know where we can find you on social media and connect with you there. If Acela, you wanted to start.
Yeah, I can start. So again, I'm Estela Mata from Looms for Lupus. I also co-host a lot of the support groups with or facilitate the support groups with my sister Juana. We provide support not just for those living with autoimmune conditions like lupus and overlapping conditions like fibromyalgia and mental health, but we also provide support for caregivers. We provide these services both English and in Spanish. We have toolkits to help you, you know, continue to thrive despite living with these conditions. And I think most importantly, we have support groups both virtual and in person. We host conferences, symposiums, both virtual and in person. And I just want everyone to know that even if you don't have the conditions that we're talking about, right? We're encompassing so many autoimmune conditions and overlapping conditions. We are connected, right? We're a community connecting others together. So just here, even if you don't have the conditions that we mentioned, we can connect you with others. And I think this is why I love working with AI Arthritis, is because we are really all of us working together to making a better community, a better resource, creating resources for everyone. And, you know, just remember, like, we're really just knitting a community of hope, and we're here. You can find us on at Looms for Lupus on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, on X. And if you are Spanish speakers or you know someone in that speaks Spanish, my sister has her TikTok account. We have our personal account, but everything you can find under our link tree, which I think you're going to post, Leila, everything there. We also have a consulting company called MAS, Mata Advocacy and Support. And we realized we were reaching to more than just lupus, more than just fibromyalgia, more than just the caregivers, and which is why we launched that. So if you want to book us for any speaking engagements, we're available to do that as well. But we support, we advocate, and we empower those living with these conditions. So I hope that, you know, we were able to give you a little bit of insight and connect with you all.
Thank you. And Terry?
Well, how am I supposed to follow that? but I am Terry Wong. You can find me. I am also known as the butterfly. From Float Like a Butterfly is what I kind of do most of my advocacy under. And just a quick spelling note on that butterfly. I am from New York. And so you can find me at Butterfly K on pretty much all of the social media. And you can see the social media, all the links on my link tree at Butterfly K as well. And like I said earlier, what I really always want to do, my goal in kind of every direction, is to help people living with these conditions to feel seen, to feel heard, to feel understood, to feel believed, and to know that you are not alone. And along with that, to kind of help educate the people around us, to let them get a better understanding of what it is that we're living with and what it is that we're going through. And so I do have, I mentioned earlier, I have a regular column at Sarcoidosis News. Column is also called Float Like a Butterfly. I am super excited to share. Once again, I just published a book called Kaleidoscope Rare Disease Stories, Elevating Other Voices to Share More Stories to Reach More People. And, you know, that is just, I think it's one of the most powerful things that we can do, is to share our stories and build those connections. And so this book is available on Amazon now. And it is also going to be a series with the next book, not starting it yet, but keep your eyes out for. The next book is going to be a kaleidoscope of invisible illness stories. And I know that just about everybody who is watching this or listening to this knows where we're coming from with that. And so, again, it is, the kaleidoscope stories. I will be sharing voices and sharing stories, because what you say matters, and you all have a story to tell. And more than that, there are so many people out there who need to hear it. And I'm trying to help with that.
Thank you, Carrie. We really appreciate that. And you can find AI Arthritis on all social media platforms at IFAIArthritis. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at lupus.lifestyle.lay. If you or anybody that you know has an AI arthritis condition and is also considering weight loss surgery, I would love to be able to talk to you about any concerns that you might have, and let you know about my experience with the weight loss. I have had a really big improvement with my lupus symptoms and my joint pain and everything like that. So if there is anybody that you know that is considering a surgery, please send them over to me on TikTok and and have them take a look at my page. If they have any questions, feel free to ask them to me. If you are looking for any other resources about any other AI arthritis conditions, you can visit our website at www.aiarthritis.org. We have a lot of different things going on. We have World AI Arthritis Day that's coming up in just less than 2 months. So we are prepping for that coming soon. Along with that, we also have our Grace and Able compression gloves that we have been promoting, our chili red color that any of the proceeds that come with those gloves, part of the proceeds does go to our organization. If you're looking to order anything else from Grace and Able, we do have a coupon code that is AIArthritis10, so that, you know, 10% of your purchase can also help donate to our organization. Yeah, if you are looking to find any more information about us, please make sure to take a look on all of our social media platforms. And thank you again to Estela and Kiri for being here with me in this conversation today. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
AI Arthritis Voices 360 is produced by the International Foundation for Autoimmune and Autoinflammatory Arthritis. Find us on the web at www.aiarthritis.org. Also, be sure to subscribe to this podcast and stay up to date on all the latest AI arthritis news and events.